From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, July 13th, 2017. And on this day, Maine's U.S. senators and healthcare advocates react to the new Senate healthcare bill. And a Canadian fisherman died this week after freeing an entangled right whale off New Brunswick, and it's having some repercussions. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
The latest attempt by the U.S. Senate to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act has failed to gain the support of Maine senators. The bill does eliminate some of the less popular elements of the earlier versions, but the changes are not enough to gain traction with Senators Collins and King or with Maine health providers. Patty White has more.
Previous proposals to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act have included tax breaks for high-income earners. Those tax breaks have been scaled back in the latest version of the Senate bill, called the Better Care Reconciliation Act. There's also more funding included to fight the opioid epidemic, $45 billion over the next decade. But one big problem remains: cuts to Medicaid. Senator Susan Collins tweeted that's the reason she can't support this latest proposal. Neither can Vanessa Santarelli, CEO of the Maine Primary Care Association.
The deep cuts to the Medicaid program could be really damaging, particularly to a state like Maine and to our community health centers.
About a quarter of patients at Maine's community health centers are covered by Medicaid, says Santarelli. Medicaid also covers more than 60% of the cost in Maine for long-term care for seniors and people with disabilities. As in previous versions, this latest Senate bill would end the federal government's commitment to fund the program as spending fluctuates and instead institute a cap. Santarelli says that would shift costs to states, and that means the cuts would affect more than just those who rely on Medicaid for health care.
Any programs funded through the general fund or state agencies should be concerned because as downward pressure is put on the state budget, it will result in legislators having to look to other programs and services to make cuts.
The Medicaid cuts, she says, are also why the extra $45 billion in spending on the opioid epidemic isn't enticing.
While providing additional money to fund, substance use disorder treatment services is good, it should be done in conjunction with securing health insurance, high-quality health insurance plans for all Americans.
The Maine Hospital Association also opposes cuts to the Medicaid program. Spokesman Jeff Austin says it's a lopsided approach that traps hospitals when they face higher costs.
Unless they want to cap input costs, like pharmaceutical costs, then capping our revenue it sets up failure.
Another major problem in the Senate bill, says Austin, is that it would allow insurance companies in the online marketplace to offer catastrophic plans, so long as they offer at least one plan with comprehensive coverage. Those catastrophic plans would cover less and therefore be cheaper, likely attracting younger, healthy people. But Austin says that would drive up premiums for older, sicker consumers who need robust health coverage.
You need younger, healthy pay premiums to help support older, sicker people. And if they jump out of the pool they're in and into the catastrophic plan pool, you destabilize that first pool that the older sickers are in. That's the big concern.
Overall, says Lori Parham of the Maine AARP, the bill accomplishes what previous proposals did: higher costs and less coverage.
The bill may have changed, but the results are the same.
That's Senator Angus King's conclusion as well. He called the plan terrible in a written statement and says a bipartisan approach is needed to improve health care. Senator Susan Collins also tweeted that she's ready to work with her Republican and Democratic colleagues to fix flaws in the Affordable Care Act. A vote on this latest Senate bill is expected next week. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Members of the Marine Mammal Rescue and Research Community are mourning the loss of a Canadian fisherman who died this week after freeing an entangled right whale off the coast of New Brunswick. Joe Howlett of Campobello Island founded a Canadian whale rescue team and was considered an expert in whale rescue. Now the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is suspending whale disentanglements until it can complete a review of its own emergency response protocols. A.J. Higgins has the story.
The men and women who dedicate themselves to marine mammal rescue and research are a close-knit family who have been known to risk their lives to save stranded or ensnared sea animals. But on Monday, Joe Howlett became the first person ever to be killed doing the work. His colleagues reported that he was struck by the animal as it sped away.
It's a tragedy of unspeakable dimensions.
Charles Stormy Mayo is a senior scientist with the Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts, who had come to know Howlett as a seasoned disentanglement specialist. And Mayo said it was Howlett's lengthy experience with past whale disentanglements that made Howlett's death all that much more difficult to accept.
I know his reputation, which is really extraordinary, an individual who not only was exceptional at sea, but also was dedicated in a way that not many people are to trying to free animals in an environment that he as a fisherman knew very well.
Equally troubling for those who rescue entangled whales is an announcement by NOAA that the regulatory agency will be suspending efforts to free whales tangled in fishing line until further notice. Kate Brogan is NOAA's public affairs officer, who spoke to Maine Public Radio on behalf of Chris Oliver, the assistant administrator of the agency's fisheries department.
Because ensuring the safety of responders is of paramount importance, NOAA Fisheries is suspending all large whale entanglement response activities nationally until further notice, in order to review our own emergency response protocols in light of this event.
To hear that NOAA has suspended all entanglements, I think it's just given us all pause as to sort of trying to understand what happened and how we work better and to try and keep it as safe as possible. Frankly, I'm surprised, given the nature of what we do and what the disentanglement crews do, that there hasn't been a loss of life earlier.
At Allied Whale, a marine mammal laboratory at the College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor, Rosemary Seaton is the stranding coordinator for the Northeast region of Maine and a research associate with the North Atlantic Humpback Whale Catalog. She says most people have no idea of how powerful an ensnared and frightened right whale can be.
Even if the animal doesn't even touch you, just the force of it pushing away with its flukes can push you aside. I mean, it's immensely powerful, and I think people underestimate that.
Seaton says she hopes the fishing regulators will consider whale rescues on a case-by-case basis and that the suspension period will be temporary. There are believed to be just 500 right whales remaining in the world. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
While the federal government pulls back from global efforts to reduce greenhouse gas pollution, the New England states are considering whether to go their own way with more aggressive curbs on power plant carbon emissions. Fred Bever has details.
The Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGGI, is a market-based cap-and-trade program that sets limits on carbon dioxide emissions in 9 northeastern states, including all of New England. Power generators can buy and sell emission allowances under the program, which can give a financial boost to cleaner sources, such as wind or hydro plants. So far, REGGI's allowance auctions have raised more than $2.5 billion, with the proceeds flowing to the states and most of them investing heavily in energy efficiency efforts.
All the evidence points to the fact that REGGI's working well. It's been a great success since its inception.
Peter Shattuck directs the Clean Energy Initiative at the Acadia Center, an environmental policy group with offices in Maine and around the Northeast. Since REGGI's startup in 2009, he says,
carbon pollution is down 40%. Electricity prices are down 3%. And at the same time, states' economies have grown by 25%.
Not all of that is directly attributable to REGGI, though. The recession softened electricity demand considerably, while the surge of relatively low-polluting, low-cost natural gas into the power markets played a big role in the overall emissions decline. And a variety of factors are at work on overall electricity prices and state economic growth. Now the question is whether REGGI should put a bigger squeeze on CO2 emissions and try to raise more money for state efficiency efforts. But getting the nine states to agree?
It's a significant challenge.
Mark Cohn is the director of Maine's Bureau of Air Quality.
Each and every jurisdiction has certain challenges that are each unique and different.
Behind closed doors, they've been debating how far or even whether the carbon cap should be lowered. Back in 2012, the states agreed that CO2 emissions should be reduced by 2.5% a year through 2020. After that, the goal might be in a range of 2.5% to a 3.5% annual reduction. Maine, says Cohn, prefers the less aggressive target.
We're looking, certainly leaning towards the lower end of that. And I think people need to recognize that Maine has one of the lowest carbon dioxide emission rates for our generating assets in the country.
That's because Maine's energy mix includes a healthy dose of non-fossil fuel generation from hydro and biomass plants. So paying a premium for additional CO2 reduction is arguably a burden that Maine would see as other states' problem. But Cohn says Maine does make good use of its share of the RGGI auctions and on balance is benefiting from participating. Other states, including Massachusetts and Rhode Island, are pushing for more aggressive reductions in the carbon cap, and environmentalists like the Acadia Center's Peter Shattuck want the largest possible reduction to show leadership at a time when the administration of President Trump is backing away from climate change action.
This is an opportunity to, and a necessity to fill that void. And this is not uncharted territory for RGGI itself. It was conceived during the 2000s when the Bush administration was not acting on climate, and a bipartisan group of governors came together and formed the program.
The power generators, meanwhile, are largely staying out of the fray. Dan Dolan is director of the New England Power Generators Association, whose members include both fossil fuel and renewable resource plants. He says that since World War II, the industry could count on electricity demand to grow at a steady 1% a year. But that's changing.
We've started to see that rule bend, and part of it did start because of the recession and the pullback from some of the manufacturing and industrial facilities here in New England. But we've also now started to see a material impact of all of this spending on energy efficiency and the changing way that the consumers are using electricity.
One of those new ways is to power their cars. Gas-powered transportation continues to deliver the bulk of the nation's human-produced carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, while the contribution from electricity generation has declined sharply. As programs like RGGI and other state policies squeeze even more carbon emissions out of the electricity supply system, increasing demand for electricity with more electric cars could result in net reductions in CO2 emissions. And that would mean more profits for power plants. Stakeholders on all sides of the issue say that's the next big wave in decarbonizing the economy. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, July 13th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.